As a final reminder, please press zero to register a question. At this time, I will turn the call over to Dr. Scott Brown with the University of Missouri.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's great to be on the call with you all tonight. As we talk about the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, or CFAP as it will become known, it's really my job tonight to give you the details of the current parameters of the program. I'll avoid talking about good or bad. I know there are some questions that are going to come up about just exactly how it's going to be implemented, and I'm happy to try to address those. But I guess as I start, I really want to kind of step back from cattle for just a second and remind us that we are talking about $16 billion in the CFAP program going out to all commodities. When you look at the breakout of that $16 billion, $9.5 billion is from the third round of stimulus or the CARES Act, and the remaining $6.5 billion is from CCC funds. That you'll only see one check in terms of what you will get from the CFAP program, but USDA is watching both of those pieces of that $16 billion to meet budgetary requirements. You are only going to get 80% of your total CFAP payment to start. The remainder will come depending on the total spent in that first tranche of 80% going out. USDA will spend the money until they exhaust all $16 billion. I will say that second tranche right now, I would tell you late summer, is probably the timing to maybe see a potential remainder of payment available. If you look at a couple of the other issues here, so adjusted gross income in 2016, 2017, and 2018, if it's greater than $900,000, you're not eligible unless that greater than $900,000 came purely from agriculture. Payments under the CFAP program, and that's payments across all commodities, top out at $250,000. If you're a LLC, the kinds of partnerships, that could grow to $500 or $750,000. Depending on the owners of that corporation, if it's an LLC, how they are engaged in the operation. In terms of how do you certify, so as producers, you're going to talk about cattle you would have sold as well as cattle you have on hand during different times periods. So it will be a self-certification by cattlemen around the state of Missouri. I say self-certification. I think you're going to want to keep a hold of sales receipts, et cetera, that you may have to make sure you can back up what you say you sold or you had on hand at any point in time. FSA has and USDA has said they will do some checks. That could come through the county committees of FSA, but USDA may use some other ways to also do some spot checks. So it's important to keep those records. I believe keep them for 3 years as we think about this CFAP program. If we, so my last kind of general point here I would make, so applications will be accepted starting May 26th and will run through August 28th of this year. I encourage producers to sign up as soon as practical for them. For those of us in the cattle business that maybe haven't been in FSA offices a lot in the past, given we don't tend to see a lot of payments to the cattle industry, number one, FSA county offices, you need to find your county office. They are open for business, but that business is being conducted by phone appointment only, so you need to call your local FSA county office to get an appointment scheduled. I encourage you to make that contact quickly, especially if you haven't really worked in an FSA office before. When we start to look at the cattle side of this equation, I would first say, you know, you have really two pieces to the overall payment. Part one of the payment rate is you'll be reimbursed for 80% of the price decline that occurred mid-January to mid-April. And those payments are actually coming from that CARES Stimulus Act. If you take, for example, feeder cattle less than 600 pounds, you'll get a payment of $102. That's automatically calculated. You don't have to worry about what you might have sold cattle for in that period. This is a national payment rate you'll get of $102. Feeder cattle, 600 pounds or more that were sold in that January 15th to April 15th period, you'll get $139. Fed cattle for slaughter, $214. And what's been dubbed slaughter cattle mature, $92 a head. I believe that's going to be where beef cows that were liquidated or slaughtered will fit. They also have a catch-all other cattle category, also $102. So that's the first part of the payment, and it is paid on cattle you sold January 15th to April 15th. The second piece of this puzzle here is the highest inventory you had between April 16th and May 14th, you're going to get a $33 a head payment on all categories of cattle. So the combination of those two pieces will make up your total payment on a farm level basis. So I think there'll be some questions. And again, that $33 is regardless of are these feeder cattle less than 600 pounds, more than 600 pounds. It is the same payment rate for every animal. Again, you're going to self-certify what your inventory of those different cattle categories are for that second payment that you'll receive, or second portion of the payment that you'll receive. That's a fairly quick overview of what I see of the program. Again, USDA has already calculated the decline in cattle prices. Just to give you a little bit of flavor for that, and again, they calculated it on a per head basis, not a per hundredweight basis. They said the average price for feeder cattle less than 600 pounds was $812 January 13th to 17th. It fell to $685 April 6th through April 10th. So you're going to get 80% of that price decline. So that's the what we see in terms of the payment under Part 1 of $102 for less than 600-pound feeder cattle. That was about a 16% decline. For those that are maybe a digger into the data, those cattle prices came from AMS data, and they used fixed weights to value that AMS data to get it in a per-head basis. They used 550 pounds for feeder cattle less than 600 pounds, and they used 750 pounds for feeder cattle greater than 600 pounds. So that's how they came up with the per-head costs. I kind of want to close in some opening comments here by just what's this mean to the industry. So there's a lot of moving pieces here in terms of specifically how it affects individual cattlemen across the country, and has a lot to do with the timing of maybe when you made sales versus holding cattle, and we can probably get into that discussion during the question period. But in total, USDA did do a cost-benefit analysis, and I think it's helpful to talk about what this means for cattle. They're suggesting in the initial tranche of of payments going out, that 80%, that the cattle industry across the United States would get about $4.35 billion. They estimate total payments across all of the commodities that are covered would be somewhere a little more than $15 billion. And so when they come back and net us out after some payment limitation issues, that we'll receive in the cattle industry a little over $5 billion. So $5 billion trying to help offset the effects of coronavirus. I expect many of you on this call tonight will say that is a far cry from the losses that we've seen in the cattle industry over the start of the period. But really, is the way to spend that original CARES money and additional CCC money that Congress allocated to USDA for the CFAP program. So that's a quick overview, and Mike, I'll turn it back to see if we have some questions.
Here, Scott, I do want the questions, the driver of this call this evening for the duration. So we have a question from Charlie out of Patton, Missouri. When marketing cattle via ground beef directly to the consumer, is that included in this package?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So number one, I should have probably said this right away. I'm going to give you my best interpretation of what I see in terms of information USDA has provided on the CFAP program. I often joke that please don't go into your local FSA office and say, well, Scott Brown said this is the way this should happen, if they tell you it's something different. I think this is a question that will become clearer in the next couple of days, but my expectation is that you will be able to qualify for payments if you sold that animal to someone else and it was converted into beef. I think as long as you keep records of that transaction, that will be enough if someone were to call into question whether or not that was an actual cattle sale. So again, in summary, I would say, yes, I believe you qualify for a payment on those animals that might have been slaughtered locally and sold to someone for beef. So that's back to my keep really good records. But to me, it's reasonably clear you will be eligible for payments there.
All right. Just a reminder, press zero. Press zero if you have a question. This question is from Jimmy Long out of Coal Camp, Missouri. He is curious on the fat cattle definition, why the definition is 1,400 pounds.
Yeah, so I do think this is one that's going to probably see some adjustment when we get final information out, because we know some fed cattle won't hit that 1,400-pound level, and some would question whether then they qualify as for the larger fed cattle payment. I think USDA is very aware that heifers are going to weigh less than steers, and so your 1,400 pounds that they talk about in the definition of a fed animal might be fine on average, but it doesn't work when you talk about steers or heifers, and it also doesn't work well depending on where you're at in the country. I believe there's going to be clarity that will allow fed cattle slaughtered at less than 1,400 pounds to qualify. That is one piece that I'm curious to see what USDA says in the coming days. I remind you that they do have their document nearly ready to publish in the Federal Register, which is kind of the last step for them, but this is one place where I expect a little bit of clarity in the definition of fed cattle. So I believe that will become clearer and easier for all of us to understand. To Mike's comments, I believe when he started tonight, this is one where perhaps we needed someone with a little more cattle background to help with the definition of what fed cattle mean. So again, I think that gets clarified. I have seen tons of email traffic today related to that issue.
All right. Thank you, Scott. This one's from Kevin If I mispronounce your last name, Kevin, please accept my apology. Kevin Schnarr out of Marthasville, Missouri. Please review a quick summary of the program, reiterating the difference in the two segments, clarifying the difference between the two. Is the $33 in addition to the other program being feeder cattle and market cattle, or are we talking about two separately different deals?
Yep, so thanks, Keith, for that question, and sorry if I wasn't as clear as I should have been to start with. So as a producer, you're going to get one payment. That payment is made up of two pieces. Piece number one, which I dub as part one, and it's CARES Act money. That is a payment you'll receive for cattle you sold over the first quarter of, I shouldn't say first quarter, January 15th to April 15th. So cattle sold during that period. So if you sold some 550-pound feeder cattle, that piece, every one you sold, you get $102 for every head that you sold. The additional piece, all right, which is additive, so we're going to add it. It's not one or the other. You're going to get both. So it looks at your inventory of all categories of cattle, so you're going to count every one of them. The good news is, the easy news is you get $33 for every head of animal, every cattle that you have, regardless of calves, cows, et cetera. You get $33. You're going to count the highest inventory you had over that April 16th to May 14th period. It's not that you sold them over that period. This is kind of this inventory payment that you receive. So you're going to get the combination of the two in total in terms of a per farm payment. To get the first part, you're going to have sold cattle in that January 15th, April 15th period, and you get the payment on the cattle that you sold. You get this inventory payment added to it, given the inventory you held April 16th to May 14th. Now, I probably can already hear some of you going, I was holding my cattle longer, hoping for better markets, and now instead of getting, let's say, $102 payment for feeder cattle that I could have sold January 15th, April 15th, I'm getting $33 for those in inventory in that second part of payment. That's not fair. I'm not advocating that USDA did this correctly, but that is the procedure they're using to give you payments. And I think, again, Mike alluded to some of the things they're working on. I have a hunch that that's one that's going to have a lot of folks' attention in terms of we were holding these cattle through the worst of the COVID issue, trying to hope for better prices, and this payment program actually didn't help us because we held them that long.
Thank you, Scott. Emma Prescott has a question. For the CCC payment of $33 per head, has a cow-calf pair as of April 15th, does that qualify as one animal or two animals? So that's a question I've received a lot too, Scott, today. Are they counting this as a unit, or is this actually per animal?
Yep. So it is a good question. It is one where, again, I will preface by saying USDA will ultimately make this decision, but my expectation, given my reading of what's available, you'll get a payment for the cow and you'll get a payment for the calf beside that cow. So you'll get, in effect, $66 for a pair, cow-calf pair. So I believe those will be individual payments. That is not clearly spelled out in what I can read to this point, but given what I see they're doing, I do not think they count a cow-calf pair as one animal. They count it as two. So my expectation is you're going to be able to count those separately.
And that was the question we posed today to USDA, and that was the same answer. Again, we don't know for sure, but the answer I received was you would get two payments there. Okay, we have a question from Edwin Miller, Ed Miller out of Moberly. Care Act Part 1, does this apply only to animals that you sold within the January through April time frame? So again, some of this, Scott, is repetition, but I think that is good in this case. So the question is, does this apply only to animals that you sold within January to April?
Yeah, so the answer to that question is yes, you had this. It's the animals, the cattle that you would have sold January 15th to April 15th. Those are the ones that will qualify for that Part 1 CARES Act payment, the higher payment, if you will. You only get a payment on all of your cattle that you have on hand out of that Part 2 or CCC payment. So you must have sales data to get that Part 1 CARES Act payment. That's a good question, and I know these pieces are confusing, and I, again, remind you, I'm afraid we're going to get some of this, Mike, where we have, hey, I sold cattle on January 14th. Those don't count in that Part 1. It's my understanding it's cattle sold January 15th to April 15th that will qualify for that Part 1 payment. And the second piece, then, of that CCC payment rate, that's inventory, then April 16th to May 14th.
All right. Scott, we have a question from our good friend Glenn Klippenstein. Does this payment apply to breeding stock producers?
Sorry, Mike, can you repeat that question again?
So, as a question, just does the payment apply to seed stock, breeding bulls, those kind of things?
So, number one, good evening, Glenn. I would say the answer to that question is yes, it will apply to seed stock producers as well. Those, you know, breeding bulls, there's one, you know, so if you got them in inventory, that's $33.
Scott, sorry to interrupt you. The way I understand Glenn's question, if he sold breeding bulls from that January to April time frame, can he get in the all cattle category, I guess, is where it would fall, can he get money for that?
So, yeah, thank you for clarifying the answer. So, again, I believe since those were sold in the January, if they were sold in the January 15 to April 15 window, you will be eligible for a $102 payment. And Mike, I agree with you. I believe that falls in the all other cattle category. But I believe you'll get a payment. I did not see any definitional issues that would have somehow exempted selling bulls. So I believe they will be eligible for a payment if you sold them in that window.
All right, Kenny Wanflu out of Savannah, Missouri. He has a question in regards to the Part 2 of this that you're calling Part 2, the CCC. Does it apply or Part 1?
I'm sorry, Mike, can you repeat that? Because I missed just a little bit of the question.
So producers only get 80% of the money up front until they have enough, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. He wants to know, is that true on Part 1 and Part 2 or just Part 1?
That will be across the total payment, so the addition of Part 1 and Part 2. So the first thing that you're going to do, and you know, so by the way, USDA is going to have some automation available for you in terms of a spreadsheet. If you're not computer literate, you can ignore a little bit of this, but I go, for those of you that are computer literate, I believe there'll be an Excel spreadsheet where you can actually enter information. It will automatically calculate for you what those payments look like. My understanding is might even be able to print the forms you'll need to sign to go to FSA right out of that automated spreadsheet. But you're going to the question at hand, you're going to calculate the total payment due that farm, and that farm will get 80% of it. So it will be 80% of both parts. And again, if I heard Undersecretary Northey today, talk about that his expectation is the remaining money, the remaining 20% will get out to folks. And so those payments would get out in late summer. I think the uncertainty here is we don't know exactly how much will be put in for payments in all these different commodities. There's a lot of commodities eligible. And then what are the effects that payment limits are going to have on some of these commodities? There are a few commodities that feel like the payment limit restrictions are going to be problematic. But I just encourage you that I think you will see that some portion of that remaining 20% sometime late summer. They have basically said they'll prorate if they don't have enough money to make that full 20% payment.
Thank you, Scott. The next question out of Salem, Missouri, Daryl Skiles, would payment from this program count as income and be taxable as such?
Well, that's a good question that I haven't put in my thought process.
So just to jump in there a little bit, Scott was instrumental in helping us come prepare information to be successful on making disaster payments tax exempt. We were the second state in the nation to be able to do that at level. In Missouri, you no longer have to pay taxes, income taxes on that. You still have to pay that federal tax, but not the state income tax. This program is not included in that language because it's brand new. It is something that we've never been involved in before, so it is my understanding that you would probably have to, unless they made some carve out for that. Scott, do you know anything more than I do?
I don't know anything more than what you've said, Mike, so I believe you're correct unless something changes either at the state level or the federal level in terms of income tax.
Sophie Wagner from Shercoxie, Missouri, do you foresee a potential second program for cattle sold later in the year? Great question, Sophie. Scott?
Well, you're going to ask me to put my crystal ball into operation here, and I'll say, so we don't know the correct answer yet. I'll speculate here a little bit with you. So number one, we have seen the House pass a fourth version of stimulus. The Senate, I think, has been lukewarm at best to some of the provisions in the House side. To me, some of the House side ag provisions specifically would likely provide some additional payments if those House ag provisions were to become law at some point. I guess in terms of my speculation, to me, this depends a lot on how COVID-19 continues to affect, I guess, the U.S. I was going to say agriculture, but I guess the U.S. is a better descriptor here. If we continue to battle trying to open successfully and the economy continues to drag, I expect the interest in further stimulus will grow. If we start to open things up and the economy can get a little bit of jump start and we seem to be moving in the right direction, I think it's harder to get a fourth round of stimulus done. So I think you're going to find members of Congress continuing to look carefully at just what the recovery looks like. I continue to hold some concern about how quickly the general economy recovers from this, and it could be months or years to get us out the other side. Under that scenario, I think it increases the likelihood we see another round of stimulus later in the year, but certainly not too far away.
Thank you, Scott. Just to remind everyone, if you do have a question, please press 0 and get that registered, and we'll try to get it answered this evening. Justin Besser, Scott from Lawson, Missouri. Can you reiterate the adjusted income qualifications? Can you go over the adjusted gross income qualifications?
Yeah, so if you have adjusted gross income in 2016, 2017, or 2018 higher than $900,000, you are not eligible for CFAP payments. However, if 75% of your adjusted gross income comes from farming, ranching, or forestry, that AGI limit does not apply.
Thank you, Scott. The next question is from Matt Wilson out of Holiday, Missouri. How does this payment work or apply to shared cattle? So what he's saying is where the animal is owned by one individual but cared for by another.
Yeah, I've gotten this question a few times today. So I believe, given what I'm information I have available to me today, the owner of the animal will be the one that receives the payment from CFAP. And I'm not certain how the person caring for that animal would be able to. I think that has to be an individual-to-individual discussion if part of that CFAP payment should go to that person caring for the animal, because I believe USDA is going to look for straight ownership of that animal and pay the owner those CFAP payments.
Hey, Scott, did I lose you? Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Okay, now, okay, good. My heart stopped there for a second.
My apologies. Did you hear the answer to my question?
I'm at home, and I always worry about my service here in Shamrock, Missouri. So, Eric Gamble from Bloomfield says, is there a certain number of head you have to sell or have on hand to be eligible for payments? The answer to this, Scott, tell me if I'm wrong, is no.
Yeah, you need one, right? You need to sell one in that first window, or you need to have one in the second, but there's no minimum amount to be eligible for the program.
Joshua Lowry from Taney County, his question is, if a multifamily farm, does the payment vary, or is it only based on the per head amount? Okay. Let me try to rephrase this for you, Scott. So if multiple families involved in a cattle operation, is it just on the number of head, then they can split it up, or how does that work?
So I believe that will be paid to the operation, and they then, depending on their percentage, I suppose, make that split. But I believe USDA is going to look at that as a farming operation and making those payments. I'm kind of ignoring any kind of payment limit discussion there, because I think that makes this question a little harder maybe to answer. But I believe that payment will be made to the operation under that scenario, Mike.
Again, remind you to press zero if you have a question. The next one is from Tony Washburn from King City, Missouri. A good question here, Scott. If you sold or agreed to sell cattle on April 5th, delivered and paid for until April 30th, do they count as being within that rank? That's a great question.
So you actually had the transaction occur April 5th, even though delivery was April 30th? Is that the question that was asked there?
Yeah, so they made the transaction deal. They signed the agreement. They did the handshake on April 5th, but the delivery didn't take place and the payment didn't take place until the month.
That's a really good question. I wish I felt comfortable in answering. So I'm going to give you an answer, and I'll tell you that, and Mike, I'll let you jump in if you think I've answered this incorrectly. I think under that scenario, you're going to be able to claim a Part 1 payment, especially if you can show documentation that that purchase actually happened on April 5th with delivery later on. I think they're going to define that April 5th date as important. So if there's documentation that's the way it happened, I think you might be able to qualify for payments. And Mike, I haven't had that question posed, so if you have heard anything different, please jump in here.
No, I most of the questions we've heard tonight, I have heard. This is not one. I have made note to ask, and I will contact USDA and contact Tony and let him.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
I do think it's, as I answer that question, it's one I don't feel very comfortable that I know exactly how USDA is going to interpret it. So I do think it needs some clarification, and equally all. That's a question I'm going to pose to a few folks as well. So I appreciate these questions coming that I just haven't been able to think through yet.
No, that was a new one on me and a great question that I think definitely needs answered, because I think that will impact several of our members. Just to remind you to press zero. We do have time for more questions. Press zero to register a question. We have one. I will not name names on this one. We have a statement on this. This is not a question. This is a statement for everybody. An individual who works for FSA has contacted us and asked us on this call if we could remind people to be patient with them because they have not yet been trained on this program and are learning as they go. So I do think that is we appreciate the caller and appreciate that employee of FSA for urging us to give that reminder, because they have yet to go to training on this. And again, the application process does not begin officially. And okay, Scott, we're going to give it a couple minutes here. Again, if you have a question, press zero. We're not going to hang up quite yet. Have some more time. We're going to give you some more time. If you have a question, press zero. We're going to get it answered for you. So we're going to give you 2 more minutes, and if we don't get any questions roll in, we will adjourn the call. Question, press zero. All right, we have one out of West Plains, Missouri. Our intern did not write down your name, so you can blame her. Just kidding. On the adjusted gross income, is that $900,000 for all 3 years, or is it the cap for 1 year?
It is. So it's, you got to be adjusted gross income less than $900,000 for each of the years, 2016, 2017, 2018. Good question.
So Dwayne Bauman, excuse me, Dwayne, if I got that wrong, out of Moore, Missouri, what day are we able to start signing up for the program, and where do you go? So the day that so you need to make that appointment now, right, Scott? You need to call the office, make that appointment, but the application process, you don't really start until the 26th. Is that right, Scott?
So, I think you – FSA is going to tell you they're going to start accepting appointments on the 26th, if I understand correctly. Now, I would tell folks, you know, you can call your local office, and they're going to clarify that for you. But the first step is to call and make that appointment. Mike, you're correct about that. There are, again, more forms and spreadsheets going to be online. And I do appreciate the FSA comment earlier as well. I remind you all that they're in a very different situation. They are open for business, but it's by phone only, is my understanding at this point. And so these CFAP payments, they're certainly going to try their best to work with you via that phone appointment that you have. You can help them a lot by the forms and tools that you're going to find on the website. For those of you that haven't been, farmers.gov/CFAP will get you to the relevant information as it's being posted by USDA. So that's the place that, again, those of you that are web savvy, I would tell you to go. For University of Missouri Extension, for any of you that might have interaction with your local extension agent, I would encourage you to reach out to them as well if you have any questions or need any help related to get those forms together. It's why University of Missouri Extension is out there for you all, so you might be able to take advantage of that help as well, as we're trying to make sure we're educating all of our extension folks that are in the field around the state.
Speaking of University of Missouri Extension, Scott, our very good friend and cattle legend, Cole from Mount Vernon, he has a question here that you will appreciate. Is the University of Missouri's cow herd eligible for these payments?
Good evening, Eldon. I wish I knew the answer to that question. I have posed that question to D.C. If I was going to hedge and give you an answer today, my answer is I do not believe we're going to be eligible for those payments because of our nonprofit status, but stay tuned is my short answer for you. I am trying to get some clarity about whether or not we will qualify.
Next question comes out of Cape Girardeau County, a state representative and good friend and friend to agriculture, Barry Hovis. Representative Hovis has a question. If you have cattle, do you need to apply in all the counties or just one?
I believe you're likely going to – so I would start with what you would consider your home county first, and I believe that's going to take care of what you need to do for that payment. So I don't think you're going to have to make a trip to every county office. I think you can pick your primary home county for that. I can't think of a situation where that would be required to have multiple visits. That's a very good question.
You have another one out of Warsaw, Missouri, Scott, that I don't think you're going to be able to answer, but I'm going to throw it out there at you. This one is from Merlin Kreisel. What was the reasoning behind the April 15th cutoff? I wish I knew. Do you know?
I don't have any idea. You know, so for those of you in the cattle business, I might suggest USDA could have made that decision based on all of the commodities they had to cover. And when if you go look at the website at the list of commodities covered, it's a bunch of them. I think the only answer I really have is I believe they were looking at the price changes over all those different commodities and trying to make a decision about what period to count. And I don't know that there was anything too magic about April 15th. I will say 2 days prior to the announcement of Phase 3 that occurred on April 17th. So I'm pretty sure USDA was making the, hey, let's not pick a period where producers could have altered their decision once they got the initial announcement of this Phase 3 CARES package. I don't have a better answer than that. I expect some of that question is going to be debated in the coming days by a number of the commodities that are participating in the CFAP program.
Next question comes from Sharon Hardicky out of Steelville, Missouri. What about death loss from January through April?
So So my read of these payments would be that, number one, death loss over that first period does not qualify you for Part 1 payments because it requires a sale for those Part 1 payments. And I do not believe it'll qualify you for that second part either because that will be inventory on hand. And I believe USDA is going to say death loss is just a part of the normal process. And again, I say that. I understand some of you may be of the feeling that you held cattle longer and had more death loss than you would have had normally. I think USDA is saying that's hard for us to determine what's normal death loss versus not. And so I do not believe you're going to get a payment for any kind of death loss you have in that first January 15th to April 15th period.
So got another question on shared cattle or partnership cattle from Anna Sinclair at Montgomery. On partnership cattle, will there be two separate payments or one?
I think that you're going to find, in this case, FSA looking at what kind of partnership is in place in terms of how they make those payments. I expect they're going to try to be flexible enough to meet the structure of however the partnership is officially put together. I guess is my quick answer to that. Those are going to be some, so again, a very good question, and I think it's going to come down to some of the details of exactly how the partnership is put together in terms of how FSA will determine to make those payments.
So a question out of Chillicothe, Missouri, Dean Brooks here. We feed cattle out of state. They're not in Missouri. They're out of state. Which FSA office do we use? And he's also curious, is there going to be an online portal where he can just apply online, or is that not going to happen?
Yes, I'll take the second one, and I'll go. I'm not 100% sure. I do not believe you're going to find this online portal. I do believe there might be a way to send to – so you can fill out the necessary forms and send them to your FSA office is my understanding of the way it works. And I believe in that case your I would call and make an appointment or make that appointment with a local FSA office. I believe in the case where you might be feeding cattle out of state, you also may be okay. I'm going to guess with here a little bit on this one, but my guess is you're going to be okay working with one FSA office. So even though you're in multiple states, and I know that's maybe not the way it works in terms of how some of the crop payments would have worked, but I believe you're going to be okay with one FSA stop for the CFAP payments.
Again, I want to remind you, we do have some time and we want to get to your questions, so press zero if you have a question. Next one, excuse me. Next one comes from the Thummel family here in Missouri in Worth County. Will any payments be mailed or will all be handled by direct deposit? I'm guessing you don't know that. The trend of this administration through this crisis has been direct payments. Do you know anything different?
Mike, I don't know anything different, and I'm sure that's going to be the preference where at all possible. And I don't know what kind of arrangement will be made otherwise. That question certainly can be best answered once the local FSA folks have training in terms of how those payments are going to make it out to producers. But I'd expect the majority of them will be direct deposit.
So you've already answered a question kind of like this, but we got it again, Scott. If an individual agreed to sell or made that agreement, just so you can repeat this, everybody, prior to that April 15th day, but they didn't receive the payment or they didn't or execute delivery until after that date, and there's no transaction of payment, it was a handshake, What's your opinion? I know you stated it. I'm going to check on it for these individuals. I think it's a good question, but let's go ahead and repeat that one.
Yeah, so a very good question. I guess, you know, my expectation is if that transaction took place, i.e., the handshake happened prior to or happened in that January 15th, April 15th timeline, that FSA is likely going to say those cattle were sold in that period. I am not 100% confident of that answer. I think that's the question that has me most puzzled from all the questions that have been asked tonight, and it deserves some elevation to USDA to have them answer that with clarity. But right now, I would lean that I believe you're going to qualify as a sell in that window, even if the actual physical handoff occurred at a later date.
Next question is out of Morgan County, Barton Marriott. In regards to the documentation, do you need to take it with you when you apply or just need to maintain it for your records?
Yeah, so that's a good question. You will not need to bring documentation with you. And in fact, most of this is going to happen over the phone. So when I say you're going to self-certify, you're going to say, I sold 10 feeder calves at 550 pounds. You know, you're going to put that down, and they'll take your word for it. FSA and other agencies, I've heard AMS in this discussion, will do some random checks. I believe in the case of FSA, county committees are going to be involved. Did producer X, is that some abnormal amount of cattle, and should we, you know, investigate further about whether there are issues there or not? Those checks will happen post. So you can just say, here's how many, this is my inventory, this is how many I sold in the window. That's all that the application requires. Just please hold on to all your documentation. And my understanding is hold on to that documentation for at least 3 years. So do not let that information in terms of what you sold and any kind of inventory check you might have get away from you for 3 years prior post these CFAP payments.
Yes, Scott, I think that's a good reminder. I mean, if you look at the website, there will potentially be some audits and so forth, so we have to mind our P's and Q's to stay out of trouble. I think that was a really good reminder. Also, just want to remind all of you that this is the last call for questions. Zero. We don't want to miss any questions, so if you have a question, please press zero. And those that come in, I want to thank Scott Brown again. Thank you, Scott, for taking the time with us this evening. We know you're a busy man, and what you do for Missouri agriculture in this state, and what you do for our organization, Ranch Family, appreciate it. You're an asset to the university, and we just can't thank you enough.
Mike, I appreciate it, and my message to all of your cattlemen on the call tonight that I sure hope as we go through the remainder of 2020, things get better. I know it's just been an amazingly difficult time, and I sure hope we can start to see some better prices and better situation as hopefully we recover from COVID-19.
We do have another question here. Zero, if you have a question, we'll allow three more questions after this one. So the question's from Janet Crow out of West Plains, Missouri. Participated in like the Mo Beef for Mo Kids program or something like that, or a fundraiser where you donate an animal count as well?
So, Mike, I believe the answers to that question will be yes, they'll count as well. Again, I would just want to make sure I had good documentation that I donated in that window. To me, when I read what's in the rules that are setting there, I believe that's going to qualify. Just make sure you keep that documentation.
Thank you, Scott. Again, we'll give it just a minute to see if any more questions come in. At this time, we don't have any in the queue. But again, if you have any issues or you have any questions, post this call that you want to get answered. You can reach out to me. You can reach out to any of the officers, regional presidents, and we have a great relationship with Scott, and we can get those answers for you if we don't know them ourselves. There's been a couple tonight that we're going to be doing some research and contacting USDA and getting that information to you. So if you do have any issues, please don't hesitate. Welcome your calls. Again, the office number 573-499-9162. Our website, smokecattle.com. Let's see if we have another question here. And we do not. So thank you, Scott. We're going to adjourn this call. And again, thank you for your time, and thank you for everyone who joined us this evening. Have a blessed night.